Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Kim Nielsen. She is the CEO of Pivigo. Kim, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So for the benefit of the listeners, it would be good to hear a little bit about you. Not only the fact that you're the CEO of Pivigo, but you're also an astrophysicist, which actually is relevant to this whole discussion. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you arrived at this point.
Yes, of course. I think something I'm very excited about in our future of work is that we will all be having second, third, and fourth careers through our lives. And I guess I'm on my second career now. I was 13 years old when I looked up at the sky and wondered why the stars twinkle at night. And one thing led to the other, and I decided I was going to become an astronomer. And from there, I had a straight career path through school, university, to a PhD in astrophysics, and kept going for another few years working as a scientist, but had to admit to myself that actually I wasn't enjoying that work as much as I had expected to, which of course is a hard thing also to accept when you've had a dream for so long that actually maybe it wasn't the right dream. So it took me a few years to get to the point of deciding I had had enough. And then of course the challenge was, how do I translate those skills I have from academia into something that industry and business would be interested in? And I really, really struggled with that, as did, of course, many of my friends and colleagues, which ultimately led me to start the business that I run now. So for me, that the path was through an MBA at Cranfield University in the UK. And it was there at Cranfield where I met my co-founder, Jason, who has a background in recruitment. And so we started talking about the challenges that I and my friends had faced and how we have this incredible talent in our universities with fantastic skills and great motivation to start new careers, but really struggle to find work. And then on the other hand, we have lots of companies saying we can't find enough analytical talent. So clearly a gap in the market. And we felt quite passionate about trying to bridge that gap. And hence we started Pivigo 7 years ago now.
So it's interesting you bring that up. This is a recurring theme in many of my shows, that it's the adjacent possible that's created. So it's not just the study of MBA, it's the bringing together of different thinking, different backgrounds, and putting it together that essentially was the genesis, I think, of Pivigo, right?
Absolutely. Well, I certainly did not have an idea of starting my own business when I went to the MBA. I just wanted a job. But it was meeting Jason and talking about this, and I guess in combination with at Cranfield a very strong focus on personal and professional development, which made me realize that I actually quite like the idea of being my own boss. All of these things came together and into a point, and we said we wanted to give it a go. And I think one thing I learned from the MBA as well is the value of networking and just meeting other people and having conversations without necessarily having a particular goal with that conversation, but just exploring, getting to know each other, bouncing ideas off each other, and you never know what's going to come out of it. Sometimes years later. But the value of the network is incredible.
Fantastic. I mean, I think so many of those themes and threads sort of pull through repeatedly of that networking. And I think another one that you highlight that I've heard again and again is you don't have to have a purpose to have this conversational engagement. And, you know, that's something that we sort of fail with, this, you know, heads down approach in work. So let's talk a little bit about Pivigo. It's a unique organization. Tell us a little bit about how that came about and what it is and what you do.
So we, as I mentioned, we were very passionate about trying to bridge this gap initially between academics, specifically analytical academics from STEM backgrounds, PhDs, who were struggling to find work on one hand, and on the other hand, organizations looking for analytical talent. And we very quickly focused in on data science and AI as an area that we wanted to work in. It was when we started the business 7 years ago, something quite new, very exciting, something that was going to grow and have lots of very interesting applications to society and to business. So that was an area we wanted to work in. And the first thing that we started and that has been a great success for us is a so-called boot camp or a training program for data scientists called Science to Data Science. And what we do there is we bring together these super smart people in teams of about four or five, and they actually work on projects with companies, so data science projects that they deliver over about 5 weeks. And what this, of course, does is we mix up, I mean, back to the networking again, right? We mix up companies that are looking for help with their data science projects with these super smart people who want to deliver on them and ultimately make connections and deliver great value to the clients. And of course, an opportunity for the participants to get some experience that they can use then to find their first job. So that's one part of our business that we've been running for almost 7 years now and that we're very proud of. And we've taken 650 students through that program. The other part of our business, which in some ways evolved out of that, was what we call our marketplace. And this is where on a much more flexible basis for all sides, we connect companies and organizations who have data science problems, where they would like to have someone to come in and help them. We connect them with our global community of freelancing data scientists. So also this thing around having portfolio careers and allowing everyone a more flexible work-life balance. We now offer those opportunities also to data scientists to do freelancing projects with our clients. So that's the two ways that we work with companies in projects, either using these freelancers from our community or through the data science training program that we run.
So tell us a little bit about the projects to give people a sense of, you know, what those, specifically the boot camp, because I think that's the sort of the springboard, if you like, for some of the other opportunities for deeper dives and so forth. What kind of examples do you have of that?
Well, in the program itself, we have completed almost 150 projects by now, I think it is. And it's been absolutely everything you can imagine under the sky. So we worked with retail companies, with media companies, logistics, healthcare, of course, and all kinds of technology businesses. And I think the main sort of topics that we see are everything around customer service, customer marketing, pricing, everything around an organization selling more and better to their clients. We see a lot of projects around optimization problems, such as optimizing price again or optimizing your supply chain, the routes that your cars travel, your delivery vans travel. And a third big topic is natural language processing and everything to do with analyzing texts. And that can be anything from tax documents to regulations to architectural drawings. We've been studying as well in some of our projects. So it's a wide range of projects. And the good thing about the program is that it is such a nicely packaged up way for a company to really in a very cost-effective and a risk-free environment trial a little project. If you have an idea that you want to try out, they come around, they have our super smart PhDs working on it for 5 weeks, and they can see where it takes them and where it leads to and whether it's not, that's something they want to continue working on.
Fantastic. So in that, you know, broad range of companies, obviously there's healthcare in there, and you know, want to sort of dive into that a little bit. But before we do, tell us a little bit about some of the others. You know, what are some of the exact, you mentioned pricing, customer services, what kind of things, what kind of data are they looking at and how are they processing it? What's going on there?
One of my absolute favorite case studies is one we did with an SME business called Parts Alliance in the UK. They're the kind of business you would never have heard of. They're not huge, a few thousand employees selling car parts to garages across the UK. Why I like the kind of case studies working with these organizations is because actually they often have more and more interesting data than they think and more to do with it. So in their case, it was the sales database, 20 million sales points from the past decade of sales people on the phone setting prices to their customers. They thought maybe there's something interesting in there. And so on one of these boot camps, a team of four were looking at that data. They did some exploratory searches. They found that certain sales teams were better than others. And that means you can start to look at what makes them better than others, obviously. Of course, starting to look at certain products, which are the successful products and not. But most importantly, at the end of that project, they created a pricing engine where they could make a recommendation. For example, don't sell this particular product below this particular price on Fridays, last thing before a long weekend or something like that.
Wow.
And they found that, that pricing engine could save that company £6 million over the next 5 years, which to them, as being an SME business, is a lot of money.
Yeah.
So that's such a great example of the sort of value that lies in organizations' data. And many organizations are not even aware of it. They're not tapping into it. And I really, really wish that more companies would try to do something with it, because I think especially in tough times that we're in right now, that sort of benefit should be available to everyone.
Yeah, I think great point. I mean, the principle of that is that they actually had more than they thought they had, just based on sort of a different perspective of the database that they used and, you know, the capacity that you can process that. Healthcare differently, I guess. I think, well, maybe I'm wrong, but I think we think we've got lots of data. I think the problem is that in many instances, we don't have as much as we believe, or at least in a form that we can use. You've done some healthcare projects and, you know, would like to talk about that. But before we do, I'd love to get your perspective on the big opportunities in healthcare. Where are we missing the boat and missing opportunities that you've seen, based on your experience and an entirely different perspective?
I do think there's huge, huge opportunities, and I also think there are huge challenges, but we can come back to the challenges. Starting on the opportunity side, I see three big areas where data can really make an impact going forward. The first one is around drug discovery, and there are plenty of case studies. We worked on some, and there are others in the public domain, around mining our data better in such way that new drugs can be discovered, or indeed old ones can be repurposed for new purposes. And all of this can cut either the time to go to market with a new drug, or of course the cost of creating it. So that's one big area. A second one is around predictive medicine and everything to do with that. So again, many case studies out there around, for example, how radiology images can now be scanned by a computer that can at least do a pre-sorting and then a pre-selection of who looks at risk for certain cancers or diseases. A similar case study in London recently was announced around eye scans, where researchers believe that they can use eye scans to actually predict if someone's likely to get Alzheimer's. And there are so many potential applications of where data can make predictions or support doctors in the diagnoses. And then the third area, which should not be ignored, is actually operational efficiency. And I think the healthcare system, both in Britain and the US and probably in many other parts of the world, they are sort of creaking under the pressure, not just of COVID, of course, but even before that, there were a lot of inefficiencies and not a lot of spare capacity in the system. And I think data can help there as well, for example, with scheduling of doctors' rotas, of rooms, of all kinds of ways that you can make operations more efficient. So I think those are the three big areas where data can actually make a big difference.
Fantastic. So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Kim Nilsson. She is the CEO of Pivigo. We were just talking about the opportunities in healthcare, and she was highlighting drug discovery. And, you know, to that point, and obviously a lot of things are relative to COVID-19 in this day and age, remdesivir is exactly what you describe, albeit I don't think it was an AI potentially, I don't even know, but that was an old drug that was fished out, and it was fished out pre-COVID-19 for Ebola treatment. And what you're saying is, hey, let's go after a much bigger data set and start to extract that. What a exciting opportunity, and so relevant in, you know, the current day and age, plus obviously the predictive medicine and operational efficiencies. As you think about it, you clearly have, what are the challenges? I mean, there are some things in there in healthcare specifically that, you know, we face. Why aren't we getting to these things? What's going on? What's limiting our capacity and our use of this data and the opportunities from all of these incredible technologies and the available data?
Yes, so indeed, huge opportunities, but also big walls to climb to get to them. And the first one really is around, and I think you already mentioned it a little bit, access to data. And access to data, of course, is actually a multiple stage process. One is just knowing where the data is in the first place. It's about having it in one system. It's about having it clean and ready for analysis. And it's also about actually literally access. So who has rights to get to that data, and how do they access it, et cetera. So, and I think especially if you look at something like the NHS in the UK, which consists of hundreds and hundreds of foundations and hospitals and organizations, the data is scattered everywhere, and it is absolutely impossible to get a hold of it all.
And that's in a single system, right? So
exactly, yes. So access to data is huge. And then related to that, so sister problem to that is then the question around privacy and security and ethics. So even if we could get all that data in one place and perfectly clean, do we want to give access to it to researchers, and under what conditions do we allow that? And I think that's more of a something that needs discussion, something that needs regulation, something that needs a lot of careful thought before we can let a data scientist completely loose on it. I'll give the parallel of in the UK, we had the scandal of a company called Cambridge Analytica 4 years ago now. That was around political influencing, of course. And I think what happened there was that my interpretation of the situation there is that you had some very eager data scientists who basically just was given some data and wanted to just play with it and see what can we do with this. And they didn't really think about the human consequences of that. Now, political rigging is very seriously, but healthcare system is even more serious. And therefore, and unlike in that case, with healthcare data, we need to very carefully think through what the researchers are allowed to do and how they're going to go about it and what data they're allowed to see. So all the challenges really are around connecting data to researcher and then letting them work on it. And those are huge challenges. But because the opportunity and the benefits of this analysis is so huge, we have to find a way to overcome it.
I think such a great point. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up Cambridge Analytica. I think, you know, many folks probably have a fairly negative reaction, in part because of the coverage and so forth. But I think your underlying point here, and I would concur with this, I don't think people start out with evil intent. I'm sure there are some outliers, but they're not the majority. I don't think that was the purpose. And, you know, it is. It's a desire to sort of, wow, this is really cool. It was, you know, and as you look at the history of that, that was certainly the case. And you're right, healthcare data, my sort of underlying principle, my simplistic version of this is, don't use the data against me. And I know there's lots of complexity in there, but essentially if you abide by that, it was the same way that I sort of focused on patients. How would I treat this if this was my mother, daughter, whatever, same kind of principle. So.
Final comment on that. I think one challenge with this particular problem is also, it's not necessarily about what analysis am I doing today, but we have to then think about what happens next year or 5 years from now when someone picks it up. And for example, I think right now there's a big debate certainly in Europe around the track and trace systems to do with COVID, and is it on your phone, is it on your app? I think we would all in principle be very happy to sign up for this system now to help limit the spread of COVID. But I think from a privacy concern, the question is, will that data be stored in a database somewhere? And could it be picked up 5 years from now for a different purpose? And I think that's where that thinking ahead question comes from. It's yes, of course, it's what are we doing right now, but what could happen in the future?
Yeah, that future use case is really important, because ultimately, I don't know if this is entirely true, but I always feel like it is. Once the data's there, it's always there. You can't, there is no way to blow it up or get rid of it.
Genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So that future use case. So we've got a little bit of time left. Could you maybe share some examples, some use cases, and if you can, some thoughts around some of the small things that you learned along the way, those incremental steps that allowed you to walk down this pathway?
Interesting question. Yes. So in healthcare, we have done multiple projects. In fact, I think we've done pretty much everything in those three categories that I mentioned around drug discovery, predictive medicine, and operational efficiency. If I pick out a couple of examples, in predictive medicine, there's an interesting case around, for example, comorbidities and diet, and how different drugs and different diets intersect. So, of course, there are clear indications that if you take a certain medicine, you should not eat certain foodstuffs because mm-hmm. they can interact in a bad way. But what many doctors or what the medicine industry is not aware of is, of course, one person may take multiple medicines for very different conditions, and how do those interact? And so one project we did was around looking at through research around drug food combinations, and how actually maybe we need to develop new recommendations based on the cocktail of drug that any person has. So that was one project we did with a startup here in the UK. And another interesting one under operational efficiency, for example, we worked with a drug development company that has to provide customer service to doctors who are their customers in this case, who are sending out this drug to other patients. And these doctors will have questions around, well, can I give it out in this case, or what if this happens, et cetera, et cetera. So this company is constantly getting requests from doctors, questions basically to answer about their drugs. And they actually have to have, obviously, customer service attendants going through these emails. And there it was simply a case of using language processing to process these and to put them into categories of, these are very simple requests we can answer potentially even automatically. These are more complicated requests that we need to actually have a medical professional look at and answer. So that was about making that company more efficient. So picking out two examples from two different categories, perhaps. In terms of incremental value, I think the one thing that I think all companies need to think about is this thing around data. So the smallest thing you can do really is making sure that whatever you do, you're collecting the right data in the right format and in an easily accessible way. So the one small thing I would ask anyone listening to this doing is to have a look at what data you're collecting and how you're collecting it, so that you're setting yourself up to be able to use this data for data science projects and gaining value from it in the future.
Such an important point relative to COVID-19, because I know that's one of the prevailing discussions in some of the health informatics groups that I participate in. We're not thinking about that and how we can potentially use it. Just from a testing standpoint, these tests come out in multiple different formats. So incredibly important. Absolutely fantastic. It's been a delight talking to you. I think some tremendous insights and opportunities in the healthcare space, and obviously tremendous opportunity to work with highly skilled, knowledgeable folks in these boot camp arrangements that allow you to sort of springboard to bigger projects. So just remains for me to thank you, Kim, for joining me today. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me, and I look forward to seeing where this industry goes in the future.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.